Blog Talk Radio.
Hello. Time to leverage. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the backyard. This is your host, Margaret, and I'd like to welcome you to Backyard Labyrinth. We're here each week on a Wednesday at 8 o'clock, and as most of my listeners know, that we're here to celebrate and preserve the rich culture of Jamaica. We're not a political forum. We are not here to say what's right, what's wrong. We're just here to celebrate what was. And actually, I would like to welcome our listeners online and to let you know that if you'd like to join the Labyrinth at any time and interact with us, please forgive me for not being able to interact with you online. I'm not that techie yet. And my co-host is sort of sidetracked with some her kids in school, so all you've got is me, and I can only speak on the phone, but I'll get that fixed pretty soon. But I would like to invite you to call in at 1-718. Of course, if you're in New York, you don't need the 1, but our call-in number is 718-766-4558. So we want to invite you to join us. We hope that you have selected your favorite chair and you are imagining that the trade winds are blowing over the island, whether you're under a tree or on your front veranda like we used to do in the old days before there were all those bars all over the houses, and just relax. And get ready for the Labyrinth, because this evening we're going to be welcoming a past guest who is a Canadian, actually, and we expect her to be calling in over the border at any time. So, in the meantime, I'd like to welcome our listeners online and to remind you that this is a Labyrinth, so when you want to say something, ask a question, or make a comment, or make a suggestion, just hit 1 on your telephone. So I'm going to be asking for some input here because my guest is not calling in until, I think, 10 after 8. So I wanted to talk to you this evening about something that I saw recently on Yahoo News, and it really touched my heart and sparked my interest. Because I've been trying to encourage my peers to join me in enjoying this new technology of the internet. But the headlines of this particular news was Web Surf to Save Your Aging Brain. And you all know I'm a senior. So, you know, when you're that senior, things are aging. And it shows. But now I was really perked up when I saw that there has been a medical study done at the University of California in Los Angeles. They actually did a medical study and found that, researchers found that older adults who started browsing the web experienced improved brain function only after a few days. Now, how about that? How cool is that? And it goes on to say that now browsing on the net, you know, requires you to make decisions because you have to know when you Google something, you know, several things related to whatever you put in Google will come up. So you have to make a decision. Do I go on the first one? If I go on the first one, will I get what I want? And if I don't get what I want, do I pick another one? So, you know, just having to make those critical decisions, which is not that it is that important, but it apparently puts your brain, and because it's new to us, it puts your brain in some sort of fast forward, and it really helps. Can you imagine? And I mean, they tested this with, you know, with the MRIs and whatever else they do to test your brain, and found that it actually improved seniors' brains in just a few days. I was very, very, they didn't say specifically how many days, this article. And this article is recent. I think I only got it like 3 days ago. So I it's not old news, you know. This is a department that specializes in human behavior, neuroscience, and aging. So they're really testing us to see how we react to the internet. Now, it went on to say that, you know, older people need to be not scared of the internet, but to embrace it, because I'm telling you, if you know that something will improve your brain in a very short time, then I think we all need to be browsing. Now, I remember when I was younger, you know, as a young woman, you would want to go browse when you go shopping, even if you weren't buying anything, because it perked your interest, you know, well, what was new, what was hot. In those days, we didn't call it hot, but whatever, in fashion. And, you know, and you perhaps would buy, but a browsing was always something we did. And it was quite, for me, it was quite stimulating. I never thought of it necessarily as stimulating my brain, but I can just tell you from personal experience that browsing the internet has opened up a whole new world for me, because there's nothing you can think of that you want to find out or get some opinion on that you would not Google and find something on it, even if it's one word, a whole term, a whole sentence, whatever. There's always going to be loads of information, sometimes, you know, too many for you to really go through every one. But I thought that was quite interesting, so I wanted to share that with our listeners. And I want to remind our listeners again that you're listening to Blog Talk Radio, and this segment is Backyard Labrish, and we're here each week at 8 o'clock to celebrate the rich culture of Jamaica. And I see that I have a 416, and I think our guests have arrived. So I am going to open up the mic to our guest for the evening. If you got our promo, you know that it will be our past guest, who is Phyllis Walker, and she is such a inspiration to me because she's so busy. You know, she's doing all sorts of things, and I was so thrilled that she was gracious enough to share her early experiences with us. So without any further ado, I'm going to open up the mic to our featured guest this evening, who is an accomplished artist and a passionate senior who has great love for her country and her culture and education. So, good evening. This
good
is
evening,
Margaret.
Margaret. Good
who,
evening.
Who do I have?
This is Phyllis Broom Walker speaking to you from Toronto, Canada.
Oh, well, welcome, Miss Canada, Miss Canadian.
I have been here so long now in this country that I have to call myself a Canadian, although my heart and soul, the very roots of my existence, the creativity that is in me came from my country, Jamaica.
From your roots.
My roots. My
yes,
roots.
Yes, yes, yes.
Two sets of roots, my spiritual roots from Africa and my spiritual roots from Jamaica.
Yes, and as you talked about Africa, I have to remind our listeners, both those that are listening now and those that will come by later, that you are the keeper of the Anansi flame.
Definitely.
And
definitely.
I think that is so cool. It's such, you know, the tagline is so original. And
well, pardon?
Will you tell me how you came up with that? Is that something you termed yourself? Or
I gave myself that title. And I told Miss Lou, I said, Miss Lou, we have to carry on this legacy that you have given to us. And the only thing that really belongs to all of us, the scattered diaspora,
right,
it happens to be the Anansi stories. Because if we think of religion, the religions have been grafted onto us from other cultures.
Right.
If you think of foods, we have taken foods that have been grafted onto us and changed them over. For example, the Christmas pudding.
Mm-hmm.
It came from the British, but we have given it our own unique flavoring.
Right.
And everything you can think of has been grafted onto us, but we brought out of Africa with us, Mother Africa, those stories, and they belong solely to us and to Africa, nothing else.
Oh, that is beautiful. That
and that's
is
why
beautiful.
I tell them. That is why I tell them, because where other people can go back, say, you can go to visit Greek friends, and they're doing dances from their village that
mm-hmm.
are so old, or the Irish that are so old. Almost everybody else. We have lost all of that. But
right.
What we have kept happens to be these Anansi stories. So I'll tell them till I die.
Wow. Now, can you tell me how you got started? Can you remember when you were first exposed?
Well, in my home, you know, it's funny in life how you kind you never find out certain things about yourself until many years have gone by. For many years, I've wondered why I've always been a social activist. And I have questioned myself. I've thought, but you weren't poor in Jamaica. My father had a bakery, so we always had food to eat.
Right.
Why have you got this burning passion about education and lifting up your race? And this year I was in a club and I was talking to a man on the left. And a friend of mine was sitting on the right. And I said to the man, when I was growing up, my father insisted that his four daughters should learn to type. Because he said, no matter what happens in life, you can always get a job if you're a good stenographer. This is just something he believed.
Right,
and
right.
In our garage, they used to have the Young Socialist League meetings.
Uh-huh.
And the job fell to me to type these minutes.
Ah.
So as a very young teenager, I was exposed to all the writings of Marcus Garvey and a variety of people who had this impulse to make the world a better place. And it took me all these years, because I've had many things offered to me that would have taken me away from that pathway, which it's believing that education is a key to a better life.
Uh-huh.
It's just remained with me. And then I just realized this year, it is that early brainwashing, because my friend who was sitting on the right said to me, oh, you were brainwashed a long time ago.
Ah,
and it was just a startling thing. It was mm-hmm. a startling thing, because I say always, children are the products of their homes.
Right, right.
And I'd never put that part of my being into understanding why I have this feeling, because Marcus Garvey has always said to us, up, mighty race.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I wanted to just point out, you mentioned one thing, you know, by you doing the minutes, it was the repetition, the repetition of hearing that information and, you know, translating it or, having to type it.
Yes.
Yes. So,
I never understood.
Right, right.
All these years until this year as a senior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's strange how things can just, you know, the light bulb goes off.
That's right.
You know, eventually. Like, you know, as it said, we have all the answers to, you know, our own lives and our own paths. We have the answers and our questions.
Yes.
But we don't get the answers. Sometimes we're so busy that mm-hmm. we don't get the answers. So when the light, you have an moment
mm-hmm.
took all this time, but it was always there. But now that you look back, you see how important it is to have the foundation. The foundation has to be laid.
And this is why I think that a lot of people, seniors like me, who never had any children, there is no reason for us to sit around and say, I'm lonely or I don't know what to do with myself, because the smallest input that you can make into a child's life, you don't know when that is the catalyst that mm-hmm. might cause that child to change. And I really think it's just a shame that there are so many miserable older people who just sit at home sulking or defining getting older as a moment for misery and thinking about arthritis and pains and aches. Yes, these things happen to us, but we could be enriching some child's life. And I don't know about where you live, but here in Toronto, we have one of the finest library systems, and they also have something called a homework club. Let's say you don't want to bring a child into your home or you don't want to go to the child's home. You can go to the library and volunteer to come in. And you're in a safe environment. It's there in the library.
Oh, wonderful.
And you help a child.
Yes.
Oh,
I wanted
wonderful.
To have it here. I must check that out. That is a great idea.
But I think it's just super, because you can sign up to help two or three children, and you're sitting there in the library. And we know we live in situations where children can tell stories. We have the world international example of Michael Jackson, where boy, 13-year-old boy said he had molested him, and now he has come forward at the age of 22 to say his father forced him to tell that lie.
Right, right, right.
So we can understand sometimes people don't want to get involved because they think, I don't want any problems. But there, the library, you can just be sitting there surrounded by other people. They have a room where the children sit, and it's all just absolutely safe and secure. And you do your hour, whatever time you want to give, and you walk away and you go home.
Oh, that is a great program.
Mm-hmm.
Great, great program. Well, Phyllis, I wanted to talk a little bit with you about what you remember of your earliest childhood education. First of all, tell us where you grew up and, you know, sort of who influenced you in the as far back as you can remember.
As far back as I can remember, I went to what we called prep school then, called Camperdown.
Camperdown, okay.
Camperdown. And we had a wonderful female principal, Mrs. Grant.
Wow. Uh-huh.
And,
was she a native Jamaican or English?
Yes, she was. She was a native Jamaican.
Uh-huh. Okay.
She was a Jamaican, born and bred there. I think she went away to Great Britain, studied, came back and started her own school. And so it was a sort of medium-sized school.
It was a private school.
Yes.
Okay. And what year was this? I mean, approximately.
Oh, mercy.
In the 30s, 40s, what?
Maybe, I'll come back to that question.
Okay.
I'll do some little math here. But after that, I mean, I was a very, very naughty little girl. Sometimes I look back and I think, how can you be so prim and proper and you were so rotten?
Or were you an only daughter or something?
Absolutely not. I was one of 11, but because I had 7 brothers and my family kept trying to turn me into a girl when I wanted to be a boy with my brother, Trevor, doing all the wrong things that they weren't as much naughty as they were boy things. But how else could I be? That was the defining influence around me.
Right.
So I was very, very naughty. I used to
fight. Wait, can you tell me what you're calling naughty?
My father at that time was deputy mayor of the city of Kingston, justice of the peace. So then you can imagine when his daughter is coming home fighting like a little Muhammad Ali.
Oh, a fist fight.
Fist fight. Tearing off people's uniforms, chopping them with my slate.
Oh, my goodness.
I got in a fight almost every single day. That's how naughty I was.
At what age you think you were then?
I think maybe I was about 9, so that was in the 40s.
Right, okay.
But you see, this is why I am so full of hope for all children.
Uh-huh.
Because if I could have been so, so very naughty, and then I...
Look at
down,
now!
No,
isn't it wonderful?
The thing about it is, I always loved studying, though.
Uh-huh.
See? So there I was, maybe getting D's in social behavior.
Right.
But getting A's in my studies.
Uh-huh.
And I don't even know if that was any virtue as much as, I mean, a kind of showing off personality that I am going to read better than everybody else. So you don't know what motivates people to do well.
Uh-huh. So did you have a grandmother in your home or some senior person?
Well, my grandmother lives a little ways down. And so I would go home and I would get a thorough spanking for my naughtiness.
And who would do the spanking?
Oh, my mother.
Oh,
my mother
okay.
Would. Or she would say to my father, you're always spoiling this girl and she's been fighting all week and so on and so forth. And then I'd get spanked and then I'd walk down the road to my grandmother.
Uh-huh.
My paternal grandmother would say to me, you're the prettiest, smartest, brightest person in this, well, not village, but in the town. And she would always make me one of my very favorite things then. I loved homemade lemonade, limes, of course, made with limes.
Right.
And our crackers, you know, our crackers.
Right, right. Water crackers.
Fish, water crackers. And so I knew I was very naughty, but just thinking I was extra special to my grandmother made me feel good.
Built up your self-esteem.
Built up my self-esteem. And so I just continued being just as rotten, but I just didn't care one way or the other what they said. To me, my grandmother thought I was wonderful. But you see, I always intercede when children are fighting when I was a full-time teacher. Because nobody ever said to me, why did I keep on fighting?
Uh-huh.
And the whole thing is that, number one, I'd had eczema, and so I had marks on my legs.
Uh-huh.
And they would be calling me Leppy, that I'm a leopard.
Oh, yes. So they were teasing you.
They were teasing me constantly.
Uh-huh.
Constantly. And whenever children are constantly in conflict in schools, it's usually something they either don't want to disclose it, they don't want to tell, but there's a reason why.
Right. Something prompts that behavior.
And but for the fact that I really always was ahead in my class. I mean, I remember at one time I was at exercise 52 in Latin, and the rest of the class were at 15.
Wow.
See? So that This desire to study and learn kept me sort of straddling both things. When the principal would maybe like to really deal with me, should remember, I am the one who could recite the poem so beautifully at the concert, or I am the one who had excellent marks.
Right, right.
So
you actually had a balance in your life. You had a balance because you weren't all one thing.
No. You see?
And you had a balance in terms of encouragement, because when your parents would chastise you, your grandmother would praise you. Not
well,
for your bad behavior, but just for who you are.
You know, she would just love me unconditionally.
Yes,
just
great.
Just love me unconditionally.
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't saying to me, behave. You know, she would say,
right.
I love you. Where to the parents fell the job of keeping you on a straight and narrow pathway.
Right, right.
And I think that a lot of the children today, they're so lonely. You meet them, they have nobody to talk to them. You can go into a school, and when you're leaving, they just want you to know and acknowledge them, because a lot of their parents are so busy. They're
right.
all working. They don't have any time for all this talking that children love to do. I was on a bus the other day, and this little girl, she was about six. That trip was about 30 minutes. She talked nonstop to our mother for the whole trip.
Mm. Now, was the mother listening, or did the mother interact with her?
Hardly, because you could see tiredness etched all over her face.
Right, right, right.
You know?
I think a lot of times parents don't even realize that they're talking at their children and not to them.
Yes.
You know, it's not a interaction between the adult and the child. You know, they're either chastising them or giving them a command or things like that. And a lot of time not listening.
Well, I always talk to parents. I'd say, buy yourself a timer and say to your child every night from 8 to 8:10, that's your time. It doesn't have to be a long time, but just a time. If you can only do it three nights per week, let that be carved in stone, that the child knows that these 10 minutes are sacred and belonging to him or her. And those who tried it just found it such a useful tool that out of the busy day, the child could know that this is my space, my time, that mommy and daddy can be with me, or mommy or daddy, whichever one.
Right.
Because I think loneliness, it is the key thing for a lot of these children. That's why they get into so many problems with other people.
Right.
See?
And a lot, because a lot of them are bored.
Sure.
You know, a lot of them are bored, yes.
And now there's some focus that they're starting now to have things for the middle school, which is like grade 7, 8, 9, 10 here, so that instead of getting themselves into trouble, because I know this is an American statistic, they've proven that most of those children who get pregnant between the hours of 4 to 7 when their parents think they're just sitting there reading or watching TV. They're actually having affairs with boys in the home.
Right,
the
right.
Parents are at work.
Uh-huh.
You see? So it's we can't have it all. We can't have all these people on the television showing their bodies naked, half naked, and then ask these children to be pure and chaste.
Mm-hmm.
If nobody's watching them, it's all nonsense.
Mm-hmm. Because even some of the shows that are, while you are watching a show with a child, you never know what promotion is going to come on for another show that they're just
right.
showing the sexual scenes. Now, I'll tell you, I was watching Dancing with the Stars with my grandson last night, and they were advertising another show, and or two shows, and both of the ads were all so sexual. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It's just, and I'm saying, my goodness, it's just 8:30. And they're just all over, you know, falling down with kisses and all of that, and the young child is sitting there.
Well, I think that the only thing that we can do is to fight fire with fire, because I usually say to the children, you see those people who are dressed that way, They've got great big bodyguards that if anybody tries to touch them, mm-hmm. they are in trouble. So you cannot dress like that because mm-hmm. you're on the street by yourself and you don't want anybody to harm you. Because if you remember back to the days when we were growing up in Jamaica, and I am not saying that we didn't have bad things happening, but okay. everybody understood this drive that is in human beings. People did not pretend that mm-hmm. things will not happen. And we have gotten into this habit of pretending. For example, they're talking now in the States about having women and men on the submarines. The submarine is down for 90 days.
Uh-huh.
And so you have all these men and maybe two women or three women.
That's so ridiculous.
It was on The View. There was a discussion. Somebody was saying, well, they just have to understand that, you know, this is the way it is, and they've got to keep their thoughts to themselves.
Oh, so yeah.
I don't watch The View often enough to know the names to call them, except Whoopi. But there is one woman, she is not a married woman, but she has lived with a man for many years, she says, on the program. And she was the only person saying, you know, just laughing.
Right.
Just laughing. Because we have come to a place, I think, in this world where we are trying to remake human behavior.
Uh-huh.
And to a large extent, I don't know.
It's not working.
Chris Rock was on Oprah over this film he has done, Good Hair, and he made a statement which really stayed with me. He said, regardless of how women look, if you put a set of women and men on a deserted island, to that effect, men and women will get together. So his point was that women don't have to be doing all these things to find a
right.
mate.
Don't have to be in place all the time.
That's right. So it's thinking about what are our values that we're passing on to children. Are we passing on to them the importance of being human beings with integrity,
right.
having values that are not to be shaken like, you know, a tree in the wind? What are we personally in our home teaching our children? And this is what I think all of us senior Jamaicans have. And people may cuss the British, but for me, the British and inculcation of our minds, as opposed to the Americanization of the younger Jamaicans, we can weigh up which one encourages virtues,
mm-hmm.
which one encourages a sense of self-worth. Which
uh-huh.
one says, if you can buy all the bling in the world, it makes you a somebody?
Right, right, right.
And so we can compare and contrast.
Uh-huh, definitely. And that's exactly how I feel. I tell my listeners that part of what I do on this show, and, you know, most of my guests do the same thing, is that we're celebrating the good things that we brought, or what we considered help us be who we are from our culture in Jamaica.
That's
the
right.
way it was. And I know that a lot of the people that have been on, there's so much that they are celebrating, you know, from the past. It's
yes.
not, I mean, we have, that's what we have to do. We have to concentrate on the good things. I didn't say bad things didn't happen, as you mentioned, but, you know, the more you focus on the good things, and there's been so many instances where Jamaicans over the past 500 years have overcome so many different things, whether it's related to natural disasters or, you know, physical harm by, you know, another nation or race or whatever, and we've always came out strong as a people.
We simply cannot think that our pain has been the only pain in the world.
Right.
All over the world, people have suffered, every
huh?
single group. The Russians enslaved their poor people. As a serf, you couldn't even allow your eyes to meet your master, or you'd get your head cut off. We can go around the world.
Did that oppress their people too?
Oh, definitely.
Uh-huh.
It's fascinating to. They would, the upper class would just go and take the servant girls, have babies, throw them out in the street. I mean, it's the whole history of the world is full of horrors and wonderful things all at the same time.
Right. What I wanted to ask you, though, in this time while you were growing up at Camperdown, is there any one person or one incident that you think, not necessarily one, but, you know, what stands out to you as things that really help to form your character?
I think just having a woman principal was a big thing in my life. I didn't think about it. It was just something natural that a woman should succeed. And I mean, although I didn't become a principal here in Canada, I did all my studies. I have my principal's qualification courses, part one and part two. I didn't become a principal because one day a friend of mine, Marva, said these words to me. She said, "Phyllis, when you talk about your classroom, your eyes light up, you laugh, you're full of joy. And the only thing I've ever heard you saying about being a principal is that you're going to make more money. Are you sure you want to do this?" And I was quite taken aback, but we have an honest relationship. And she's a film director and so on. So there was no reason to think she was being jealous of me or anything like that.
I
went away and I really thought about it. I thought, you know, one of the most difficult things in my life is keeping my papers in order. So do I really want to be locked up in any place saying that I am a principal and dealing with paper and running a school? And I had to say no.
Isn't that wonderful?
If we're going to talk about money, I can earn more money not teaching than I can. You know, and with that, because I've been in the kink in my hair, a TV show here. I mean, what I earn for the day is what I would earn for a whole month teaching. And I really had to stop and think, but you know, who gave me this idea to be a principal? It never came from me. From the minute I started teaching, they kept on saying you should be a principal and grooming me. So I went off and did my master's and my this and all these things. And then when I came to the moment, and she asked me this question, whose idea was this? I had to stop and think, it never ever was my idea. You see? I don't regret the studies. I certainly don't, because I always enjoy studying. Here is winter time. I'm out doing my winter classes. You know, I signed up to do work with the camera. And I, of course, always have to do something for fun. So I'm doing Bollywood dancing.
Wow. That's cool. Very cool.
Because I really take the motto that learning is for life. I don't see any reason why, because you reach 60, you must roll up and start seeing how miserable you can be.
That's right. That's right.
Look
so
at what
together
you're
we're
doing.
Going to encourage all the senior listeners that might come by and listen to this show later on, and those that might be on now, both online and on the board, to really take the torch and move with it.
And listen,
there's no reason.
There's no reason.
Absolutely no reason to stop learning.
And even if people don't want to go out, we all have the computers that we can go online. There's so many wonderful things. If your interest is gardening, you can be reading about plants. You know how much I found out about the chocha?
Oh, really? On Google?
A friend here grew some chochos, which are known as Christophine for other islanders, or chayote, I think Filipinos and other people call it. She grew a whole plant here in Toronto. Her next-door neighbor had a greenhouse and started it like in January and then put it out in the summer. And you should have tasted these things.
Wow.
Well, I went online and I found out so much about it that in some countries they dig up the root, a portion of the root after the third year, and they eat it. They cook it like potatoes.
Wow.
See? And so this thing called a computer, it doesn't only have to be for, you know, risque stuff or what some people want to use it for, negative activities. There, you have a whole world of wonderful things there, you know. So all seniors should just declare themselves to be illness-free zones. Even if we're sick, you know, we forget about the sickness.
Right. It's interesting because just before you came on, I was sharing with our listeners that I found an interesting article on Yahoo News that says web surf to save your aging brain. And it went on to say that a medical research was done at the University of California in Los Angeles, where they actually tested some seniors on surfing the web, and this, their brain function improved in only a few days. Just a few days. And they have the results from MRIs and things that they do.
This is
a documented study. It's funny that you should go there because I have to tell my listeners, you were not online when I was discussing this.
I wasn't.
And that was what I did prior to you coming on.
See?
It's really amazing to me that you should go there.
There's no excuse whatsoever. You know,
So we can encourage them, you know, that it's not only so inspiring to me to find out new things. As you say, you're even was researching something that you knew little about, but you learned so much more about it now, the children.
So much more. And you know, up here it gets very, very cold. And as I tell people, because I am in charge of a walking group, the last Friday in each month, we go on a historical walk. We're not speed walking. The focus of our walk is to learn about the history of our city, Toronto. It's like next Friday we go to see a place called the Music Garden. And it's all planted out. Yo-Yo Ma does the narration on one of the little tape recorders that you can have. And the garden is an interpretation of one of Bach's works.
Wow.
And so we walk, we talk, because get out, you know, interact.
Uh-huh.
We came from tribes initially. All races came from tribes. We're supposed to interact with human beings, not just cats and dogs. So.
And not just machines.
That's right, you see. So my the retired teachers here, we have many areas that we can get involved with, book clubs, bridge, movie evenings, whatever. It's just not a good thing for people to stay home and just feel sorry for themselves. As the saying goes, if you don't use it, you will lose it. And I think that's what Jamaica gave to us, because we are all friendly people.
Right, right, definitely.
Growing up as a child, you have that inculcated in you that you reach out to your neighbors, your friends, and so you have this ability to talk to people, to say hi, you know. And the whole, and this is something that I must say about education in Jamaica. The place of rote learning, for example, here, you'll find very few children who know their times table.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
And I still have not figured out why anybody would say don't learn your times table when it's the simplest way of doing divisions.
Right.
So all through my teaching career, regardless of what was said, I taught just the way I was taught in Jamaica. I would teach all the children, a noun is the name of a person, place, or thing.
A
verb is a doing word. An adjective is a describing word. And everybody had to learn their times table. So I think that parents should take back these old things, because there are so many people who keep floundering in school when all they need is some rote learning so that they can understand what they're doing.
Right. The repetition embeds it in your subconscious. Do you know, I remembered a little poem that I did. My aunt told me I was 3 years old. And I can remember it now. I was three. It was 2, 4, 6, 8. Sucking mangoes while we wait. Faces all in such a state. 2, 4, 6, 8.
Marvelous.
I don't know how. I mean, when I was saying this thing one day, my aunt looked at me and she said, I said, I don't know. It's just in my head.
That's right.
And she told me that they must have taught it to me. And I was entered in this little fair. They had a fair and they had kids my age doing things like that. And I went on stage and said it and got a prize. All of this about getting the prize, why it was so embedded in my mind.
Yeah.
But I didn't relate any prize to the poem, is my point.
It's the whole thing is this, and this is why I continue saying there's absolutely nothing wrong with children learning their patois, just as a Vietnamese child would know Vietnamese or an Italian child would know Italian. But everyone should know standard English because
right,
it's the
right.
working language of the world. And that allowed all of us to walk out of our native land and land good jobs abroad because we had fluent English skills.
Right.
Uh-huh. So there's a disservice being done to a lot of the children in Jamaica now who are not having this impressed upon their little consciousnesses. Because if they get the opportunity to come abroad, a lot of them have to fall by the wayside because they just can't fit in.
Thank you. That's exactly my argument, too. And on that point, I would like to mention that, there's a video being circulated with, I think, a 3 or 4 year old. Performing as if she's mad at her aunt or something. I can hardly understand the kid because she's like having an argument, and somebody's filming it. Some adult is filming it, and they're edging her on. And this is being circulated all over the world. I must have got it 3 times. And I say, no, we are actually celebrating things like that, when it was like patois, like a poem, like Louise Bennett said, or, anything like that.
I saw it.
You saw it?
And I sent it back to my friend. I said, I don't see anything in this to celebrate.
Thank you.
That this child learns that this kind of behavior.
Thank you. That's exactly my take on it, too.
But it is. It's rude. And good manners. I just told a little boy this yesterday. I said, it doesn't matter how well-dressed you are or how beautifully braided your hair is, you are rude. And good manners will take you through the whole world. And how you are behaving, it is absolutely unacceptable. And the world is a cruel, hard place. And it will be harder for you unless you learn to behave yourself. You see, because that little girl, as far as I was concerned, was behaving in a quite offensive manner for a little girl of that age.
Right.
So they
Why would the adult be filming that to put out to the world instead of chastising the child about bad behavior?
The same way that couple could tell their children to say that they were in the balloon. And the word, everybody wants to be famous, but they don't know that the word famous has another part. It's infamous, you see? Nobody's using that word anymore, but there is a word called infamous, as you well know.
Right.
And it's the opposite of being famous.
Uh-huh.
It's when you're being known for negative things. And here we have a family encouraging their children to tell a lie so that they can get some reality show. And even if they get it, what would they have done to those children?
Right.
What did that father who forced his 13-year-old boy to lie that Michael Jackson touched him and get some millions of dollars. What has he done to his child?
Right.
Does his child still love him or care for him? His child has come out now at 22 to say his father made him lie.
I'm telling you. And, you know, each one of those children, it have to live with their conscience, You know, whether it takes them years or so when they look back. You know, so I'm just hoping that there will be some healing. When I see that little girl, you know, I said, oh, my gosh. In the old days, we would not be celebrating that. That's
absolutely
not something we would be parading around to our friends.
Absolutely not.
So it
but
tells
you
how things have changed, is my
point. And
that's point.
The Americanization of
Jamaica.
That's the Americanization of Jamaica, where vulgarity and, you know, everything that anybody can laugh at. Once upon a time, somebody would speak truth and say, this is not acceptable behavior.
Uh-huh.
But now they've gone the way of looking at all that America has spewed out all over the world. America has spewed out all this stuff that it is acceptable.
Right, it really isn't.
Because it's the destruction of the human spirit. And then they wonder why so many people are on drugs or drunk. We just had a young man up here, 22, driving a BMW, drunk, 200 kilometers in the city, crashed into a fine family coming back from church, three persons dead, and he walks away. He got out of that car. His BMW smashed that Honda. It's as flat as if a big truck had run over it.
Wow, wow.
And why would a young man of 22 be drinking to be so, if he had something that he was about, if he had some goals, if he had some spiritual truth residing in him, how could he sit somewhere and drink to the point that he was so drunk that he's driving his car in a city at 200 kilometers, kills these three people. The mother had just escaped cancer, and here she is, gone with her daughter of 20-something, and the other one, a friend, a family friend, coming home from church.
And he has his conscience to live with for as long as he lives, you know, regardless.
From
it,
you can imagine.
Side. Yeah. So I think the grounding, you know, it's grounding. People have to be grounded. And that is why I'm always here to celebrate, you know, the grounding we got when we were growing up. And hoping that, you know, some people will see the virtue in it and encourage younger people to get some grounding. Because one thing I can say about the majority of people who grew up during our period, Phyllis, whether regardless of your economic status, you know what I mean?
Yes.
There was grounding at all levels. At all levels, there was some sort of grounding.
And don't forget the neighbors, too, who are ready to tell on you.
Yes. So from what I, back to your young days now, it's your having a woman as a principal in the school was something that impressed you.
I just think I just looked at it as a doable.
Right.
It was just so right.
Uh-huh.
Because it was there, and she ran the school well, and she was warm and empathetic to all her students, and there's a sense of something being normal when you always have it.
Right,
you know?
Right. It's consistency.
Yeah. So then there were no limits in my consciousness, and I think this is the major thing about black children growing up in a black country like Jamaica.
Right, right.
You never have any feelings of being
inferior.
Yes. And I see so often, last week I was somewhere and there was this little blonde girl just running after this handsome little black boy, and he's like, they're both like about nine, but you know, little girls, they're so advanced. And I thought, here we have a little boy being quite naughty, but he's feeling affirmed by this little girl who, if there were 20, it would be unacceptable.
Uh-huh.
And this is something that we have to fight a lot of times here in these countries, where the naughtiness of other children, our children might feel, well, I need to be like that.
Right, right.
Because this person is the number one person in the school, and they can never get away with those things.
Right, I got you.
So, So here we have spent a lot of time setting up a black focus school for about 60 children, and I've always been against it because I came into Canada where we had community workers in different schools, so that the community worker would be like the hub of a bicycle wheel, and so she could support the children of poverty and help to mend the areas that they needed to have shored up so that they could learn.
Uh-huh.
And so it meant that in all the schools you would have this kind of support, and then it went by the wayside. And so even if this one school of caring parents does well, but for me, it hasn't done anything for all the hundreds who are out there full of needs.
Right.
So there's always work to be done, always work to be done. So seniors out there, I beg you, help one child. As Gandhi said, be the change you want to see. Don't just sit and criticize these kids because they're lonely. Be the change you want to see. If you have helped one child, you have thrown a pebble into the water of life with circles that will keep radiating out to the world to make it a better place.
Yes, because the children are the future of the world.
That's right.
They are. So, you know, when we help them, we're making an investment in the future of the world.
That's right.
I see that our co-host is on, and I'm going to open up the mic. She's raising her hand. Good evening.
Good evening. How
good
are
evening.
You all listening in?
Oh, welcome. We have a special guest this evening, Miss Phyllis Walker.
Uh-huh.
From Canada, the enamelist and keeper of the Nancy Flame. I want to remind our listeners that you're listening to Blog Talk Radio. This is Backyard Labrish, and we're here each week at 8 o'clock just doing that, labrishing, and we're happy that you could join us. And Donna, say hi to our guests.
Hi, how are you doing?
Fine, thank you, Donna. How are you?
Doing great, thank you. I was just listening in, and I was thinking about it because, you know, one of the things that's happening right now, we have the fall festivals that are going on all over everywhere, and I actually, you know, am a part of the PTA at both of my kids' schools, and the person who was over volunteers to help with volunteers got in an accident and was in the hospital, and so we didn't know who was going to be volunteering for the festival. So they gave me the list. They were like, well, if you're not too afraid to call people, and I was like, no, I'm not, so I called. But one of the things that was kind of interesting was that you had people that said, you know, I would volunteer a lot of times, but nobody will ask me. And I thought that was kind of interesting for grown people to think that they could not be involved in processes unless someone asked them, as opposed to them just stepping up and saying, you know, I need to be involved in community service, or I need to, you know, do something, you know, on my own without someone having to ask me. You know, it just kind of reminded me of, you know, how I walk through the house and you know, have kids, and I'll see something and I'll say, why didn't somebody pick that up? And my kids will say, well, I didn't put it down there. And you say, who put it down there? I'm sure someone else saw that there's a problem here. And to me, it's kind of interesting. You know, we have this one lady, she left a note at the front office saying, I wish someone would call me. I'm a grandmother, but no one will let me volunteer.
You know, Donna, I'm going to tell you something that I've found out. people are a whole lot more shy than you think they are.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
It's a funny thing to say, but people definitely, they hesitate. Like, I've traveled all over the world alone, and the first thing somebody will say to me, so did you go on an organized tour? I said, no, I went by myself. It's human beings out there. I just could chat to them. I got off in Paris. I just said to this man, well, they say the train runs in here and I'm going to this address. I'm not stupid. I know he's not a villain or something. Please tell me how to get to the train.
Yeah.
But an awful lot of people don't have that which you might take as just natural and normal. So I've just decided my role is to just call them because they need somebody to hold their hand. It's just the way it is. It is what it is, and that's how it is. So if by calling them you get them out, then you've done a good thing.
Yeah, well, you know, like I said, I told them, I have no, you know, it was kind of interesting because they were kind of passing, they didn't have all of the information. They were saying, well, who's going to make these calls? And I said, well, what happened to the lady? And then they explained, I said, well, you know, I don't mind. Well, hey, here's the list. And, you know, if you're not afraid to call them. And I was like, why would I be afraid to call some people that, you know, to help with this event for the children? I mean, these people that I'm calling are parents of the children, so they should, you know, if they can participate, they can. If they can, they, you know, it's either a yes or no. It's not going to hurt my feelings. It's just getting to the yeses so that we have enough people that want to volunteer.
Well, that's your role, you see. That's your role because you can do it. And it's like your gift and your gift, part of your gift to the world. You may think it's a very small thing, but here is somebody waiting for somebody to help them to come forward, and you have done that.
Mm? Right.
Mm-hmm. That brings me to a comment I'd like to make, that there's so many people who believe that they have nothing to offer. Even some of my peers and some of my friends, I ask them to come on the show, and they say, well, what will I talk about? I say, you would be surprised that you could make one statement or a comment, and it can be helpful to someone you don't know.
That's right.
You know, someone relate to what you say, someone just to hear your voice. And I wanted to just share one thing with you, with all our listeners, really. And that is that when I set up the website for the Blog Talk Radio, I needed a logo. And at the time, I didn't have a logo, my own logo. And I used the Jamaican hummingbird that I found online.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and it's still there as the logo for, you know, our segment.
Yes.
I remember getting an email from someone who asked me to be their friend on the Blog Talk. They were a Blog Talk host, too. And she wrote saying that her mother had recently passed away, and that bird was her mother's favorite bird. And when she went to the website and saw the bird, it was like her mother was sending her a message. When I selected that bird, I didn't know it was going to be a message to somebody.
And a blessing to her at the moment.
Right. You never know. You just never know. And a lot of people, everybody has a gift. Everybody has a gift. So I encourage, even if you're a little shy, you know, share something. And
share something.
The safest place to share it is like on the radio where nobody knows you. Nobody's going to find you anywhere. You're not looking at them so that if you even mess up, they're going to laugh at you or anything. So this is just so, to me, it's so wonderful. I'm just having a ball. I think I have gained a lot of years just by doing this show.
Well, even if they want to laugh, if somebody just said the other day, if somebody brings you something, weeds, you cook them, you know, and say thank you.
Right.
That was really funny.
Yes. So, well, Phyllis, you have just been such an inspiration. You know, we mentioned about having something to talk about, but there's always things to talk about. And I see six 646-479 has her hands raised. So I'm going to open up the mic. Good evening. This is Margaret, your host on Bat Dad Lovers.
Who from the Bronx.
Oh, our favorite fan from the Bronx.
I'm the listener from the Bronx. I was wondering if your guest was going to, give an answer story or
that's a good
like
idea. We have 25 minutes left, Phyllis. Would you like to share your favorite Anansi story with us since you are the keeper of the Anansi flame?
Well, I mean, I can't say no to this challenge, even though I don't think about any stories. 20, 25 minutes, let's see. 25 minutes.
There you go.
I think I can give in a little time before I go away.
And just one more question. Are you going to do it in vernacular? Or?
You want it in vernacular?
Yes, man.
No vernacular?
Yeah.
We'll have to
translate for Donna another time.
Donna will know what she's talking about.
Okay.
Hi, Donna.
I am going to give it to you just as I would start off here in Toronto. Okay?
Okay.
Anansi is a spider, the first Spider-Man. Him come over from Africa on the slave ships to these lands. Look at him, a tiny spider. Him would have fit in at the palm of your hands. Close your eyes. Him take him magic and stretch up into a tall, handsome black man. Now while all the other black men them working hard night and day, like Garrett A. Morgan, who invented the traffic signals that are used all over the world to save lives in every way. And Nancy said, me now work, me see a slave master thief all my money and me get rich in every way. Me just like a skylark fool around and play. Listen to Anansi's story. Hear about him tricky ways. Sometimes him win, sometimes him lose, but always him get up ready for try again another day. One hot, hot summer day, Anansi's wife starts to quarrel with him. She say, not a thing no in this house. Away you expect to pick me them for heat? From morning all you do is sleep, 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 and not no in the house for heat. Away you go do? Where you go do? Come out of the house and go find something because nothing know your feet. And Nancy get up and him go out of the road. When him go out there, him see Brother Ratter walk with one big bunch of planting upon him head. Him say, good morning, Brother Rat. Rat no prick upon him because he know say, Anansi up to something when no good. Him say, Brother Rat, me I say morning to you and you not pay no attention to me. Brother Rat still drop himself and I ignore him. Him say, Brother Rat, me not have a thing for eat at home. The picnic them not nothing for eat. You want give me one of them planting, one fair of them. Brother Rat look upon him, ignore him. Say, how will you ignore me for Brother Rat? Me I beg you say, give me something for the picnic them. Brother Rat take off the bunch of planting off him head and him pull off one plant for pick me one. Two, pick me two. Three, pick me three. Four, pick me four. One for Anansi wife. And him give him the five plant them. He said, but what about me? He said, yeah, man, you can stand the hunger. He wouldn't give him one more. Him put the bunch of plant up on him head and him walk off about him business. Well, Anansi take up the five plant them. The four of them for the pygmy and one for him wife, and him carry them home and him give them to him wife. Him wife cook off the planting them and serve them round the dining table, one in front of all of the pygmy them and one in front of him wife. And when she looked, she say, but my husband at home are only five planting you bring. What for you? You no have no planting for eat? And Nancy say, it's all right. Me a man, maybe just stand here. Yeah. No matter how me hungry, maybe just get more and more maga. So the first boy said, no, Papa, we can't have that happen to you. You have half of my planting. He cut off half and give him father. The second son said, that can't happen to you, Papa. Me sorry for you, to me, I go give you half of me own. The third one say, Papa, me go give you half of me planting. Him give him half. And the last one, not to be outdone, said, Papa, make me give you half of me planting too. And him wife say, Lord, me husband, you're so good, you never want to take none. Me go give you half of me planting. And Nancy say, me no want to take all of the food. Them say, eat, Papa, eat, you have to get strong. And Nancy eat half all of the half them. So him end up with 2.5 planting and everybody else have half. Man, girl, me not choose none.
Oh, that is a genial.
That is a genial for true.
Well, you know what that did for me? It was a throwback to when I was a little boy. I think it either Tuesday or Wednesday nights they used to have it, and answer stories on ZQI.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I would sit up with my catch up against the Philco radio to listen to them. Wonderful.
Right.
Thank you very much.
That was ZQI.
And
yes.
And I just want you to know that I did understand the story. It was great.
I knew you would.
Great. Well,
don't
now I see that you have, your name is quite appropriate, or your tagline is quite appropriate as keeper of the Anansi flame, because you not only had the story, but the inflections, you know, and the passion. Were you ever in acting?
Well, I've done quite a bit, you know.
Oh, good, because I can hear it and feel it.
It's funny up here. I can go into a school and, you know, there's not a child looking like me, and I say, well, I can tell a story about India or something. Everybody, see a whole set of hand come up, I want an Anansi story.
Yes.
Tell this true story. I'd gone into the school to work, and there was this naughty little boy. I see his little blue eyes looking back at me now. He would be doing all kinds of things. And one day I put him behind my chair. And when I came back after recess, every minute something was sticking me in my bum. He had taken the staples and woven them into the linen weave of the chair. So finally I said to him, you are going to behave yourself, or I am not telling one more Anansi story, because he loved them. So he says, okay, if he'll behave if he gets an Anansi story every day. I said, no. You can have an Anansi story on your birthday. So on his birthday, he came up to me and said, he wants a story about Anansi and his girlfriend. See ya?
Ah!
Me don't know one story about Anansi and him girlfriend. That's the first Anansi story I ever wrote.
Interesting.
I thought if I didn't tell him a story, I'd be in for another month of, you know, my life. Definitely. So I made up this Anansi story and this girl and bred a dog. And when bred a dog and Anansi gambling over the domino, when bred a dog licked on the domino, so bam, you know. All the hear them fall off and peel.
Oh.
Children love all these kind of things.
Right. Now, how old was this blue-eyed boy?
About 8.
Oh, I got you.
And then I said, and it was a match to get the girl. Who was going to get this girl? And a Nancy, win off, bred a dog, big house. Here this little capitalist to be. With all the furniture. Never forget that little boy. With all the furniture. 6 years old. I'm thinking about the furniture.
Imagination.
Right.
They always are so full of joy, you know.
But it showed that, you know, those stories meant something to him, because there was always a lesson, some sort
of
lesson. Yes.
Oh, yes.
and those are the kind of things, especially if they're consistent, that I think help to ground young people.
Yes.
You know, the consistence of something positive being done over and over and over again. as in the case of your grandmother being there when perhaps you were feeling a little down.
Oh, definitely.
And she was always there to hold you up and pump you up. And that, I think, is what, you know, if people have nothing to give, they can find some way to be an encouragement to someone or, you know, to be there for someone else, especially young people.
They need it. They need it. They really, really need it. Because when I think of the tremendous work it is to bring children up in a world where there are streets and lanes ahead of us in certain things, and yet they're just little babies in other ways, you
uh-huh.
know?
Yep,
they're just
yep,
babies. Because yep.
right.
they'll see anything on the TV and they think they know, but they really don't know. They don't.
And a lot of these things that are being projected on TV is somebody else's idea.
That's right.
You know, that's all it is. Sometimes a group of people or one person.
So then why shouldn't we who know better be projecting our truths onto
definitely.
Them too?
Definitely.
You see? And I just came to that decision maybe about 20 years ago that if they're going to put all this sort of stuff on the TV, I'm just going to keep on talking unceasingly about the need to have personal integrity, to
right.
continue with good manners, to mm-hmm. keep yourself chaste and not figure that you can be walking about half naked and, you know, something
mm-hmm.
is going on. I am going to speak my old truth.
Right, and be an individual and not part of the herd. I think that's what is happening a lot with the young people. They want to be part of the herd.
I don't think we can stop that, but we can show them where it leads.
Right. Mr. Fan from the Bronx?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, okay. I didn't recognize your number right off. Somehow I thought it was somebody else. But I want to thank you for joining us. And Donna,
it was a delightful period of time there listening for a change. And I really appreciate your guest.
Yes, Phyllis, we do appreciate you, and I'm sure that our listeners that come on later on will enjoy the Labrish. And I thank you so much for sharing. And I just wanted to ask you, you said you had 11 children in your family?
Yes.
Wow,
seven
and
boys,
how many girls?
7 boys and 4 girls.
Wow, and where did you fit in that lineup?
I was right in the middle.
Ah, so you had older and younger.
Yes, my eldest brother had us on the straight and narrow, you know, because with dad in politics, you know, you know the whole big brother, little sister syndrome, and, you know, life was really amusing. My
right,
eldest brother,
right.
I just loved him so much. He has passed since then. So he was more like a father figure, and my brother Trevor, who I was closest to because I followed him and, you know, we got into all the things, sliding down gullies that I shouldn't be doing, climbing mango trees, whatever. I was just in Florida, and the boy can cook so much, I can't even believe it. I mean, he made some jerk pork and potato pudding for me. I came back up here trying to make some bad potato pudding, but...
You can't duplicate it.
You cannot duplicate it.
Right,
so
I know what
you mean. I can have him FedEx me the roast pork.
All right.
Now Phyllis, you mentioned you went to Camperdown.
Yes.
Did you live in that area?
Yes, I was in that area.
What area was that?
You know Lincoln Road?
Lincoln Road?
Yes.
I'm trying to put my mind back.
Lincoln Road was not very far from Camperdown Road.
Yes.
I just wondered if you knew Lincoln Road because that's where I lived.
Ah. Maybe tomorrow I'll start remembering all these names in Jamaica.
Uh-huh.
Well, you have Camperdown Road and you had Portland Road. And Lincoln Road intersected them.
So Camperdown was on Camperdown Road? The Camperdown School was on Camperdown Road?
He's remembering more than I did.
No, I actually think the school was on Camperdown School was on Portland Road.
Oh, I see.
Which is the other, let's say, a block up, you know.
Right. And Phyllis, do you remember what the curriculum was, what subjects you did?
Well, I know for sure that we started out with Latin.
Mm-hmm.
I studied
Talk
Latin
about
when
that.
I was a little girl.
Uh-huh.
So that gave me a complete understanding of standard English.
English. Lay, that's exactly the words you used.
Sure. I went to St. George's, and it's still coming through my nose.
Definitely. You know, I mean, I remember about maybe 20 years ago in the school system here, because Canada is always doing this thing, going to other countries and bringing back stuff, you know, like New Zealand was churning out all this stuff, and we were supposed to just read to children, and the stuff would just go in their heads.
Mm.
And I just, you know, I've always been a rebel, so I just go to these meetings and say, and go back to my classroom and back in. A noun is the name of a person, place, or a thing.
Right.
The whole thing was just so stupid to me, because if you're saying to somebody, cream some butter, and they don't know what creaming means, how are they to understand that they're to put this butter and add the sugar slowly and put the mixer to cream this butter with the sugar? So how can you ask a child to write a good essay when you have never taught them the structure of the language?
Right. Uh-huh.
The nonsense that some people can come up with and get away with it and get paid to write books and all this sort of stuff. So I know, as you say, you went to St. George. Do you know somebody? Ogie. I'm thinking of this name. Because right now we have a pantomime up here, and I don't know if you know about the Heritage Singers. They're performing this pantomime on the 26th, I think. And we have quite a few St. George boys in there. Well, they're not boys anymore.
The old boys are very active up there in Toronto.
That's right, because I've been to some of their dances and things, you know.
Very active, yeah.
Very active. But the I don't think it's the curriculum that is the problem all over the place. I think that they have taken away rote learning, which I spoke of before, and those first 5 years, there's so much playing, and it goes on up into, you know, like when they're nine, there are so many people with children who can't read.
And don't even forget writing.
Well...
I mean, they can't write.
It's an abomination.
Right.
And now they're having so many problems in the university because they're doing this texting, and now when they're called on to think.
Right.
And
Critical thinking is not entertained anymore.
Yeah. Remember, we had to use the exercise books with the lines on it, and you had to write on those lines.
That's right.
But so it was legible piece, and somebody else can read it.
Isn't the word discipline, you know, sort of gone out the window?
Yeah. Well, I'm sort of a little sad that they've made so much changes in the way they are teaching now in Jamaica. You know, it has changed. So I know of a teacher in Florida who taught for years at this particular school, and it was in an area that children were always coming from Jamaica, and they mentioned, you know, that they could see a difference in the children that were coming at certain level 10 years ago, you know, 20 years ago, that it was just totally different in the general knowledge that they came with.
It wasn't so long ago when Jamaica was sending these youngsters up for the Spelling Bee contest, and they would always win.
That's right.
And then all of a sudden they screened them out because they were winning too often.
Right.
You know, there had to be a reason for that, you know.
Yes.
The preparation that our kids, meaning the Jamaican kids, had for this thing. And a friend of mine mentioned not so long ago that she went to a school in Kingston that was like the champion school for spelling.
Yes.
And in fact, if you weren't a good speller, you could be, and this is pretty radical, you could have been chucked out of the school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To keep their reputation.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
Well, a man was just arguing with me, telling me to look in this thesaurus, I'd find something. So I said to him, you know, I may not know a lot about computers, nor my cell phone, but a thesaurus is not a dictionary.
Uh-huh.
It does not.
Right.
And he was ready to argue with me, and I just walked away because I didn't want
any. They don't know any better.
That's right.
Right.
And, but I was amazed because he's teaching English. So,
yeah.
You know, I mean, such a simple thing, you should know.
Well, you know, I just will always say and celebrate that the standard of education that we had in Jamaica, I don't know if it was similar on all the islands. I can only talk about that.
Yes, I know for a fact that islands like Trinidad and Barbados in particular
had
very high standards.
Very high standard.
And
I mean,
what I am pleased with is that, you know, when it came to the higher education, our papers was sent to England, and it was graded on the same level that it was graded for the English children.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, it was no special things were made for us.
Well, when you think of it, though, you know, and analyze that statement, don't forget, we studied 4 years with a set book to
mm-hmm.
take an exam that was, I mean, the same exam could have been marked in Jamaica as well.
Mm-hmm. Right, but what I meant is it was not really a different set of questions.
Right.
It was the same questions that children on other islands and as well as in the United Kingdom would be asked.
Correct.
Well, there we cannot differentiate between any fetus that is in any womb that is well fed, nurtured, and comes out into the right environment, regardless of color, shape, size, whatever.
Mm.
That child will do well.
Mm-hmm.
Every year during the time that I taught, I would take 6 tomato plants. I'd put one almost under a rock. I would put one in some sort of sandy soil. I would put one in optimum, perfect conditions, and all the rest in all kinds of adverse conditions, to constantly remind myself that it is the home and the influences that shape and form, as we see in the movie Trading Places, which I constantly talk about, Trading Places with Eddie Murphy.
It's one of my favorite movies.
You know, because is it nurture or is it nature? That's what that movie tries to settle. I don't need anybody to settle that question for me. I know because I have seen it. I've lived long enough to have seen children that I've personally helped.
Right. We only have a minute left, so
well,
I want
to say goodbye on that note. Good night, all, from the
Bronx.
Thank
you for being
on. Thank you for calling in.
And Phyllis, you have it's been marvelous. Welcome back, and we hope you'll come back quite often to the backyard.
And I leave you for all your listeners with the words of Gandhi: be the change you wish to see in the world.
Amen. Thank you so much.
Good night,
and
Donna.
Ms. Anna and all our other listeners on the board, we would just thank you for being with us, and we hope you'll be back next week. Donna, you want to say goodbye?
Bye, and thank you. I've really enjoyed the show.
All right.
All the best. Bye-bye.
See you all next week. And this is Margaret Marshall signing off from the backyard. And as usual, I ask you to make it a great week. Bye.
Bye.